This week has seen the beginning of whatever will be the classroom presentations that I make in area schools for the 2018-2019 school year. A side note, how weird is that? We're almost two decades past the whole Y2K scare, something that means absolutely nothing to many of you listening. The number of classroom visits I make over the course of a school year can vary. In my 11-plus years working for the Refuge, I've had years where I exceeded 100 visits and a few years of less than 50. Last year was in the mid-70s, which is probably pretty close to average. Those visits often kick off in October, such as what's happening this year, and continue up to the very last days of school in May. In fact, I often see an end-of-year spike in visits the last 2 weeks. As a former classroom teacher, make no mistake about it, visits to area classrooms are one of my favorite job duties. The specific reason October is often the kickoff time for each new school year is because October is a point of recognition for refuges across the United States. October is always when we celebrate National Wildlife Refuge Week. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. So what happens is this week, National Wildlife Refuge Week, is a time and topic that educators within the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service try to share with school kids across the nation, to include yours truly and schools around the Togiak Refuge area. The way it works for me is that I put together facts and images along with a few selected hands-on materials to share with classes. Like with field notes, it's never quite the same thing. I send out emails to teachers to inquire about visiting with classes, and those who are interested let me know. Once upon a time, I used to visit with classes beyond Dillingham, but tightening travel budgets have kept me closer to home in recent years. That said, I make available what I use to schools and other communities and offer to help if I can. That's a little of how I try to get the ball rolling, to help kids to know about refuges, to know about the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and to know that National Wildlife Refuge Week is something that's happening. The National Wildlife Refuge System has been called one of our country's greatest conservation success stories. The system is administered by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, so I work for the service, proudly wearing the brown uniforms associated with the service, but working specifically for Togiak Refuge. The system has its own logo, a blue goose. In fact, some of you may have seen our very own blue goose at area events such as Beaver Roundup. We have a blue goose costume that's often at display during open house events and parades. The goose's name, nationally, not just the refuge version, is Puddles, and the person inside our goose is often none other than refuge manager Susanna Henry. At any rate, when you see that iconic blue goose, which was designed by legendary service illustrator Ding Darling, you can know that it's our country's wildlife refuge system that's represented. Kind of like an animal mascot, which was the topic of last week's episode. The refuge system itself is a dynamic entity and goes through change from year to year. How's that, you ask? The system continues to grow each year. New refuges continue to be created and added, and existing refuges continue to add land to their total, with the goal of continuing to add to protected habitat for our nation's many wildlife species. As an example, when I first started working for Togiak Refuge in 2007, there were 548 refuges. Today that number stands at 566, and it will likely be even a bit more by this time next year. This week was set aside to recognize and celebrate those refuges across the United States and even some of its territories. I mentioned that the refuge system is considered by many to be one of our nation's more compelling conservation success stories. One of the things I try to do when I talk to kids is provide a reasonably simple definition as to just what a refuge is. What I tell them is that refuges are lands that are set aside as wildlife habitat, though they can be more than that, particularly in Alaska. However, wildlife refuges, as the name implies, give priority to wildlife. More than 700 species of birds, 200 species of mammals, 250 reptile and amphibian species, and 1,000 species of fish have been identified on refuges throughout the system. That's a whole lot of different critters. As I just mentioned, the National Wildlife Refuge System today is composed of 566 refuges across the United States and its territories, From the coastal areas of Maine to the tropical forest of Puerto Rico to coral atolls in the South Pacific to the vast expanses of rugged wilderness to be found in our own state of Alaska. And they range in size from the upper end of 19 million or so acres that make up Arctic National Wildlife Refuge here in Alaska to tiny Mille Lacs National Wildlife Refuge in central Minnesota, which checks in at just over half an acre in size, smaller than the lot many of you have homes on. While some states have oodles of refuges, there's at least one refuge in every state, and one of the great things about them is that many are within easy driving distance of some of our country's larger cities, giving many urban citizens access to wildlife. These are people who might not otherwise be afforded that opportunity. However, not all refuges are the same. Some were created specifically for endangered or threatened species. Refuges such as this are pretty much off limits to any kind of public access. I mention that because one thing I often run across, particularly on our Facebook page, which gets cyber visitors from around the globe, is surprise and concern when they find out that we, Togiak Refuge, support such things as hunting and trapping. A lot of folks who don't know any better assume that a refuge means that, well, all the animals are afforded protection and off-limits. On some refuges, yeah, that's the case. However, on most refuges, wildlife-dependent activities, such as hunting, are not only available to the public but promoted, depending on the specific management goals of the refuge. Think of refuges like snowflakes, all somewhat the same, yet each one is just a bit unique. Each year, refuges receive over 7 million fishing visits, almost 2.5 million hunting visits, 30 million visits by birders and others strictly viewing wildlife, and 16 million visits to use foot, boat, and auto trails. In fact, over 40 million people visit our refuges each year. In the off chance your calculator is squirreled away in a desk drawer somewhere and unavailable, that breaks down to a staggering 110,000 people per day, every day, all year long. Going in a different direction, if you ever find yourself indulging in that, well, what difference can one person make, feeling, consider the person of Paul Krogel, the guy who got the refuge system kick-started. Krogel was in that boat, literally. Krogel, out of concern for unregulated hunting along Florida's east coast for large shorebirds, would sit in his boat in front of the island across from his home with a large shotgun and attempt to guard the island from plume hunters, the ones trying to harvest huge numbers of shorebirds. In the beginning, it was just him and his small boat and his double-barrel shotgun, one man against what at the time was a lucrative industry. Eventually, others got involved, too, through contact with Krogel, and with the signing into being of Pelican Island as a refuge by President Theodore Roosevelt in 1903, something new was born, the first refuge, and all because of the initial efforts of a single person. No, standing alone can have a monumental impact, and the efforts of even one person can, in fact, change the world. Paul Krogel is proof of that. And because of Paul Krogel, here I am today, a lowly grunt from one of 566 refuges, given a mic and an opportunity to share. Hopefully there is something in what you heard today that was either new or of interest or, better yet, both. Look at it this way. I could have talked about how to reduce fractions or something else math-related, and that's something almost nobody wants. A lot of what you heard today is stuff that I've shared with area kids. Some of it is stuff that they've maybe heard before, though I do try to vary it from year to year, so it's never the same and there's always something new. For example, this year I chose to give an emphasis to how our biologists work with wildlife on Togiak Refuge, whereas its size and remoteness provide additional challenges not to be found at a lot of other refuges. I've hauled around a really large wolf hide, a collar from a wolf that was a part of a wolf study, and photos of wolves being collared to hopefully paint a picture of the challenges faced by biologists working for large, remote refuges like Togiak. One last thing, tied to my visits to the elementary this week. One teacher down at the elementary, knowing that I'd be doing a Field Notes episode, asked if I'd give a reminder about the food drive that's currently going on. My guess is you've heard it mentioned on here lately by others. I know I have. But I told this teacher that yes, I'd be happy to mention it again. In the off chance you haven't heard, they are doing a food drive for folks in the Chignecks. The elementary is collecting dried or canned goods which will then be sent to the people down there. The drive ends November 2nd. If you have a chance to drop something off, it would certainly be appreciated. You can contact the elementary school to find out more. Think of efforts such as these in the spirit of the Old Red Green Show, for those of you that remember that program. Just remember, I'm pulling for you, and we're all in this together. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.